special report from President Bush at a news conference in Huntsville, Alabama. He has just begun speaking. Let's go there and live.
Space program. And I'm convinced we will, but I think anybody who sees the dedication of the workers here and then hears what the possibilities are will be supportive. But it's I salute the workers here at Huntsville and across our whole space agency. But today I have an announcement I'd like to make, and then I'll be glad to take a few questions here. Let me know when you're ready.
He's off mic.
Walker's got the wrong mic open. Your shotgun open.
Thank you.
Are we ready? No, no. Well, based on the recommendation of the Secretary of State, I have decided to suspend the dialogue between the United States and the PLO pending a satisfactory response from the PLO of steps it is taking to resolve problems associated with the recent acts of terrorism. In particular, that May 30th terrorist attack on Israel by the Palestinian Liberation Front, a constituent group of the PLO. By way of background, on December 14th, 1988, Yasser Arafat, speaking on behalf of the PLO Executive Committee, recognized Israel's right to exist. He accepted the United Nations Security Council resolutions 242 and 338, and he renounced terrorism. Now, subsequently, the United States announced that because the PLO had met our long-standing conditions for dialogue, we would begin a substantive dialogue with the PLO. And at the time, we applauded Chairman Arafat for taking these essential steps, and we have conducted such a dialogue with the PLO through our embassy in Tunis. Over the past 18 months, representatives of the United States and the PLO regularly exchange views about the political and security situation in the region. On balance, we believe that these exchanges contributed to progress in the peace process. On May 30th, 1990, the Palestinian Liberation Front attempted a seaborne terrorist infiltration into Israel. Palestinian Liberation Front leader Abu Abbas represents the PLO on the executive committee of the PLO. The size of the force and the geographical target area strongly indicate that civilians would have been the target. That day, we issued a statement deploring this attempted terrorist attack. On May 31st, we raised this incident with the PLO in Tunis. We told them that it could not avoid responsibility for an attempted terrorist action by one of its constituent groups and needed to take steps to deal with the matter by condemning the operation, disassociating itself from it, and by also beginning to take steps to discipline Abu Abbas, perpetrator. We've given the PLO ample time to deal with this issue. To date, the PLO has not provided a credible accounting of this incident or undertaken the actions outlined above. The U.S. Does take note of the fact that the PLO has disassociated itself from this attack and issued a statement condemning attacks against civilians in principle. But as we previously indicated, this is not sufficient. This alone is not sufficient. The US-PLO dialogue has demonstrated that it can advance the Arab-Israeli peace process. And at the same time, the dialogue is based on the assumption that the PLO is willing to abide by the conditions it accepted in December 1988, including renunciation of terror. At any time that the PLO is prepared to take the necessary steps, we are prepared to promptly resume the dialogue. In the meantime, we would hope and expect that the peace process would proceed as intended and without delay. We remain committed to the pursuit of a comprehensive settlement of the Arab-Israeli conflict and to a just and lasting peace. And as often stated, it is our view that such a peace must be based on those two resolutions, UN Resolution 242 and 338, and the principle implicit therein of territory for peace, and provide for Israel's security and Palestinian political rights. We believe that Palestinian participation is vital to any successful process, and that there are real opportunities for Palestinians in this process. We strongly hope that Israelis, Palestinians, and the Arab states will recognize these opportunities and take the necessary steps to create an environment in which a viable peace process can thrive. We denounce violence in the area and call upon all parties to eschew violence and terror and opt instead for dialogue and negotiation. We're prepared to continue working with the parties toward this end. I'll be glad to take a few questions.
A couple of the Secretary Baker's words that the Israelis should call the White House when they're serious mean that the U.S. position in the peace process in the Middle East is dormant right now?
John, it's not moving forward right now, and the offer still stands. I have sent a letter to Prime Minister Shamir. I have very specifically asked questions that relate to seriousness about the peace process, but I would like to see the peace process move forward. Nothing herein should indicate anything different, because here we are simply taking a narrow shot at the terrorism. Yeah, Norm, excuse me, I forgot my protocol here.
Marlin seemed to have lit a fairly short political fuse with his comments on the SNL bailout and accusing the Democrats of having a big part in that mess. Are you ready to play that game this election year and blame the Democrats for a problem that others have laid on years of kind of permissive regulation by the Reagan administration?
Norm, you're almost getting me into the fight by the way you asked the question, but I know I'm not going to. No, I want to get the savings and loan problem solved. And Marlin, properly, seeing a couple of shots across my bow from certain distinguished members of the United States Senate, decided not to acquiesce in those attacks without some response. What he did was appropriate. But what I'm trying to do is not respond to individuals and to simply keep moving forward on this process and not try to be out there saying here's who's to blame and here's who's not to blame. But it was interesting, because I think you're right, a spark seemed to be ignited there, and I think more important than continuing to pour fuel on that spark is to work cooperatively with the Congress in trying to get this mess solved. And of course, that is a part of what will be discussed in the budget process. I would say to the American people on this one, the obligation is to protect the depositor. That's what our obligation is. And another obligation is to prosecute those who have broken the law. And there has been an active prosecution underway. I talked with Dick Thornburg at lunch yesterday. I got some impressive numbers of the numbers of cases that are being followed up on now. And I expect we'll see plenty more. So protect the depositor, put those that are guilty into the dock where they belong, and see that they are brought to responsibility for what they've done.
In retrospect, agree with the argument that deregulation or unregulation of the savings and loan, the financial industry, occurred too quickly, went too far in the 80s?
Well, I think in looking back, I think some of the excesses of the loan policies are rather obvious. Basically, we made some proposals, I think, in that task force that I headed that might have corrected some of the abuse, but I don't want to argue in favor of re-regulation of industries. But I will say that I think some of the loan policies instituted after the changes were made were foolish and were certainly ill-advised. And the result is a pounding for the original purpose of the SNLs, which was primarily financing housing in this country.
Yeah, John.
Is it true that none of our allies, with the exception of course of the Israelis, wanted you to suspend these talks with the PLO? And you said you had given the PLO enough time. I mean, why now? I mean, is there some reason to tap in today?
No, I don't think of any reason today, and I didn't set up, in my mind, X numbers of days. But John, I think there will be a lack of agreement with what I've done here on part of some of our strongest allies. And I know this is true on the part of some of the most reasonable and moderate Arab states. But I would simply remind them of the conditions upon which the dialogue started in the first place. And I would also remind them that if they look at this statement and remedial action is taken, the dialogue from the U.S. side can promptly be restored. Jerry.
President, at the same time you're having this trouble with the PLO, you've also got a new Israeli government that has an avowed policy of settling in the West Bank more rapidly than it's been settled in the past. How are you going to deal with that government? What's your policy going to be on aid for that government, specifically on housing guarantees for Soviet immigrants?
Well, Jerry, I think I probably... my position on settlement in the territories is probably as well known as anything. And our policy is not to have new settlements, and our policy is certainly not to finance new settlements. Is that responsive, or was there another part to your question?
The specific question now, though, we'll provide housing guarantees for $400 million.
Well, but not to settle in the post 67 territory, in the territories beyond the 67 lines.
Are you going to get specific new guarantees from this new government that won't happen?
Well, I will, and I hope I'm successful, but I think there is no question that the Shamir government knows my position on this, knows the standing position of the United States. Here and then, Jim.
Mr. President, as you know, Nelson Mandela arrived in the United States today, and you're going to meet with him next week. What are you going to tell him on the sanctions question? And the second part, there have been reports some weeks ago that the United States Central Intelligence Agency was involved in a process that led to arrest many years ago. And there have been suggestions that you should apologize on behalf of the United States government and American people. Can you do that?
No, I will take my leadership on that question from Mr. Mandela, who put it very well when he said, let bygones be bygones, and that is not to agree with or disagree with the charge. On the second point, you were first, my second, the sanctions under the law cannot be listed until certain additional steps are taken by South Africa. Let me be very clear. I salute Mr. de Klerk for what he's done. He's come a long, long way. And I salute Mr. Mandela for his approach to de Klerk. I think that demonstrates a willingness to talk that few of us might have predicted a couple of years ago. But there still are things that have to be done under our law in order to lift the sanctions. And I've listed them here, but anyway, you don't want to go into the details on it, but if you do, I'd be glad to click them off for you. But in any event, there has to be progress. And I'd like to find a way to show Mr. de Klerk that we, the United States, are grateful for this new approach that is having South Africa evolve to a much more open society, and hopefully one day to one which is colorblind in terms of participation in the political process. But I can't lift the sanctions under existing U.S. law. But I'm looking forward to talking to Mr. Mandela about this. There are black leaders in South Africa that disagree with him on this question of sanctions. The foremost of those that come to mind is Mr. Buthelezi, but with whom I have talked about this question. And I historically have not felt that certainly adding to the sanction base would help at all. And I had some original reservations about a sanction approach, but I will say that it seems to, if you can credit sanctions with the evolution of towards democracy in South Africa, I'd have to say, well, seems to be, there's some good things to it. But it's delicate because I want to find a way to show our appreciation to de Klerk, and yet I don't want to pull the rug out from under Mr. Mandela.
Mr. President,
Jim, sorry, we'll come back. You're standing up, I can't see you.
President, are you planning to support a G7 initiative to offer economic aid to the Soviet Union at next month's economic summit?
Yeah.
And if so, what has caused you to change your mind?
I'm not planning to do that. And I expect, though, that matter may be discussed. I've tried to be very upfront with Mr. Gorbachev when he was here about difficulties in terms of financial support. I talked to him in Malta about that. Indeed, we presented him with a list of things that might be done to improve our ability to work in full cooperation with them on that. But I don't plan a new initiative, and yet I want to see perestroika continue. I haven't changed my view that economic reform is important, and I recognize that support from the West can well help the economy. But there's an awful lot of reform that has to take place in the market and in the distribution systems. There's some political problems that we have that I've discussed very frankly with Mr. Gorbachev, not the least of them, $5 billion a year going down to Cuba. So we still got some problems there, but discount the fact that we are planning some bold new initiative. On the other hand, I'm perfectly prepared to talk to our allies on any subject, and I think that will probably be one of them.
There are reports that President Niederreiter will propose such a plan.
Well, the Germans are interested too, and I'm not saying we're not interested, but I am saying there's some formidable obstacles. Yeah, Jim.
Back on the PLO, one of the theories passed around in your own administration was that the intent of this terrorist attack was to derail the peace process. Are you at all concerned that by suspending the dialogue, you're playing into the hands of the hardliners like Abu Abbas? And is there also a danger?
Yes, let me stop you there just to respond so I don't forget the question. Yes, I am concerned about that. Go ahead.
Well, if you're so concerned about it, then why did you take the second?
Well, because we had to weigh the whole question. And the question was complicated by the fact that there were three specific undertakings, one of which, a very important one, in my view, has clearly been violated. So, but it's not an easy call, because I know some feel that the PLO dialogue is totally unproductive, and as I indicated in this statement, I don't. And the question up here was, will our allies agree with the steps that I've taken here in Huntsville today? And the answer is no, some of them will not agree, because they do feel that the dialogue has kind of helped calm things in some parts of the Middle East. So what the answer to it is for the PLO to take the action that I've called for and to satisfy us that those who are responsible will be disciplined and condemn this specific act. It's not enough to simply reiterate one's concern on terror.
If I may follow up,
please.
Is there a danger, too, that those Palestinians who would put some hope in the dialogue between the PLO and the U.S. might now throw up their hands in desperation and resort to violence?
Well, I hope that's not the case, and yet I would refer you to the very last page of my last paragraph or two of the statement when I did call for no violence, and I think it's fair to say that that any time you're dealing with something as complicated as the Middle East, you worry about that. But I hope that's not the case, and I hope they'll see in my statement a rather temperate view here that though we're specific in calling for the condemnation of this particular terrorist act, that it, once that is done, in keeping with the Arafat's undertaking, that we can resume talks. There has been a frustration, Jim, in the Arab world, that this dialogue has not resulted in more progress, and I understand the frustration. I don't happen to agree with it. I think things are better because we've had the dialogue, but Israel is strongly objected to it, and some Palestinians have been, as we can clearly see, concerned about it, but I believe that we ought to try to find a way to get it back at some point. I'm not so troubled on that, because I think they will see here that I am not accepting the premise that there is no good to come from talking to the PLO. So I don't worry too much about that point.
But do you see Mr. Shamir as too hard line, as the kind of leader who is going to say, well, you're right, and therefore we'll stay away from the war?
Well, I'm hoping that's not the case, and one of the reasons I sent him this long and lengthy letter was to make clear to him that it is our view the peace process ought to go forward, And it's going to be difficult for him, but it must go forward, and it must go forward along the lines of what originally was the Shamir plan. And then it became Mubarak got interested, and he played a useful role in it. Then Jim Baker got involved and done a heroic job in trying to get the talks going. So I hope that the U.S. will have a useful role to play, regardless of the step I have taken here in the PLO, because as we all know, we were not proposing that the PLO be at the table. This was a charge made against us by some of the some in Israel, and that doesn't happen to be the case, and I think the government knows that. Yeah, Rita, excuse me, I should have gotten earlier.
Mr. President, during the campaign, you said often that we've got to find a way that people who have children won't be threatened with the loss of their jobs. And now you're saying that has to be a voluntary position on the part of employers to give parental leave. How does that fulfill your campaign promise for people who work for employers who won't give voluntary leave?
You've got to keep working for them till they do. Because my campaign promise did not go to what they call mandated benefits. And just to be sure I was right, we looked it up again yesterday. And that my position has not changed. And I see that I must convince some Republicans as well as many Democrats that it hasn't changed.
Do you have any point of view on how you're going to convince these employees? Many of them say if it's not a mandatory requirement, why should they do it?
Well, I have a great, great faith that collective bargaining and market forces move towards progress. And we've seen it in the private sector, and I want to see it faster and quicker in the private sector without burdening every bit business by the same formula of mandated benefits. Yeah, Charles, excuse me.
You specified that the PLO dialogue has been positive and productive, but you haven't really told us in what way. Could you be a little more specific about that? What productivity do you see in it?
Well, I think the very fact we are talking can, and that's one of the reasons I hope that it can be restored, can eliminate differences. And I would like to feel that the PLO, because of our dialogue, doesn't see us as quite the hostile country once they did. And there's all kinds of small points that are taken up by our Ambassador Pelletreau in Tunis that I think have reduced the levels of misunderstanding. I don't want to leave you the wrong impression that I think the dialogue has resulted in a more dynamic peace process. But I do think that it's good, and I think that it encourages moderation in the Palestinian within the PLO ranks. I think we lose sight of the fact that Arafat did something that was predicted no Palestinian leader could do when he recognized Israel's right to exist as a state. And some might say, well, it's about time, and I'm one of them. But that was quite a step forward. It was quite a step forward when he recognized Resolution 242. And I think that was positive. And then I think we've had a chance to solidify those gains, modest though they might have been, through dialogue. But I can't point to the fact that that has really solved the question of Middle East peace. I just feel that talking offers more potential than stiff-arming each other. And yet we can't digest it as long as this terroristic act is sticking in our throat, and properly so, as a country that decries international terror. Run here. The rafters coming. Two rafter questions here.
Question about space. How serious are you about this lunar base and Mars mission proposal? Would you go so far as to veto the bill that contains massive appropriations if Congress decides to delete all the money?
I haven't even contemplated any veto strategy. I'd like to get what I want. I think it's in the national interest. I think that the United States must remain way out front on science and technology, and this broad program that I've outlined, seed money that I've asked for, should be supported. But I think it's way too early to discuss a veto strategy. We took one on the chops in a House committee the other day, and I got to turn around now and fight for what I believe. Yeah, and then over to Brett. Yeah.
President, how far will you go to protect the NASA budget in the future? Can you remove it from HUD and give it to Social Security?
It's pretty hard, given the way Congress functions, and that is a function of the Congress, not of the executive branch, to decide under what committees these budgets are budgets are worked. So, but I think it is fair to say that I will fight for a fully funded space program. We've put forward what I think is a bold one. I've taken some shots saying, hey, how can you propose something this big when we have such a large deficit? And I understand the question, but we're talking about stretched out, we're talking about stretched out financing, and we're talking about hopefully a continued dynamic economy. And between the two, we can accommodate this goal if we all get with it. Brett, right up in the attic.
Was there not a need here, sir, to not appear to be indulgent of the PLO at a time when the administration has been tougher than perhaps any recent administration in Israel?
That's not what made my decision. And I don't know that we've been tougher. I'm the President of the United States. The United States has a policy, and I'm supposed to, I think, go forward with our policy. And one of the big problems we've had is the question between ourselves and the Israeli government is this question of settlements. But I don't, I wouldn't read my decision here to go as follows. He made this decision because he's concerned about a complicated relationship with Israel at this point. That's not why I made the decision. But some may read it as that, but we are staying with our concept on the peace process, and we are staying with our policy on settlements. And this action that I've taken today is consistent with our policy on anti-terror.
Final question. Yeah. Do you feel that Israel committed acts of terrorism in response to Palestinians?
Well, we spoke out in the on recent. Recent violence in the Gaza, and please note my last comment to call for calling for peaceful resolution to these questions as opposed to violence and international terror. And that's the way I would respond on that.
Well, thank you. While you're here in Huntsville, sir, you are here to help raise money for Governor Guy Hunt's gubernatorial.
You're not standing right here to do that, but I was downtown doing exactly that, and I hope we were successful because I am totally committed to his reelection. I've respected the progress the state of Alabama has made under his leadership, and as I look at the way my philosophy of government works, the governors are very, very important on all this. I cite not just the Education Summit, which I work closely with Guy, but this whole concept that the states and localities have a significant role to play, not just in the money end of it, but in the whole setting of objectives and goals. So I'm glad you raised it, and yes, I'm here. That part of the trip was strongly to support him, to support other political leaders, too.
You have goals for your space initiative. Do you believe Governor Hunt can help you reach some of those by being so strong in the Tennessee Valley?
Well, I think he's a proponent of the space space program that I've set forth. I think he's got great credibility with other governors. If I'm not mistaken, I think he's hosting the national governors down here. And that'll give him to have an opportunity to make the case for space or any other initiatives for. But he is seen by other governors to know what he's talking about in this area and clearly to be a strong proponent. And I guess the bottom line is yes, I think Governor Hunt here can be helpful to our objectives in terms of a vibrant space program.
Mr. President, are you going to nominate or appoint Governor Hunt's nominee to the TVA board?
Well, I don't know that I'm going to carry my enthusiasm that far, but he's made a strong case for a person that he believes in, and he did it in his typical way, typical of Guy Hunt, right direct, told me exactly why he favored a certain nominee, and then seemed to be saying, look, I recognize that you have a lot of factors to weigh in this decision, but I leave here understanding exactly why he has taken the position he has, and I leave it in the position as respect, and I'm not prepared to discuss further what I might or might not do in this TVA. You're talking about the TVA appointment.
Say how long do you think you'll make an appointment?
Matter of days.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. After us.
President Bush has expected, announcing this afternoon that he is suspending the U.S. dialogue with the Palestine Liberation Organization, saying he's doing so because the PLO has failed to condemn and expel members of its own organization who were involved in an attempted terrorist attack on an Israeli beach. His news conference in Huntsville, Alabama, we wish to apologize for the audio problems. This was a pool transmission, meaning, of course, we had no control over the video or the audio.